doing in here is writing that is generative, is just giving you materials that you've written so that you can do more writing or get in touch with things that are in your unconscious that want to get out but you can't get at any other way. You kind of have to go off and do something else and pretend you're not listening, and that's when your unconscious starts to work. So the exercises we do are trying to get at that. So what we do is look at the piece of wood or whatever we're doing and not think about anything, but let the unconscious do the pulling up from underneath. So what we're going to do this afternoon, in one of the first classes, and I'm so pleased that so many of you are still back again, because the more writing you do during the time you're here, or any time you're working at writing, the more writing you do, the easier it is to look back and see what it is you're saying and find out what it is you want to write about. We did a self-portrait in one of the classes, which was a fun thing to do. But I have a book here. These are old, but it's called The Zen of Seeing. And this is what writers try to do, is see things. Not just look, but to actually see things. So what we're going to do first as an exercise, usually I have you do limber up exercises, but since we're tired up here, we're not going to. So if you would take, there's some of this kind of paper which has computer stuff on the back, which is fine for drawing. But if you're really serious about keeping it and framing it or anything like that, I do have some better sheets here that you can pass down. I've loosened some of them. Anyone want a good sheet without the computer paper? And of course, the premise of this book is, it says the artist, he or she is the unspoiled core. The unspoiled core of every person before he or she is choked by schooling, training, conditioning, until the artist within shrivels up and is forgotten. And you can probably all remember drawing in first or second grade, and you drew this wonderful picture, and the teacher came along and said, "What's that?" And you said, "Well, it's a tree." And she said, "Oh no, trees are like this," and she showed you how to draw the trees. Or my one daughter has the example, her teacher told her you could never put red and yellow together. So she believed that for a long time, you know. Well,
doesn't
that
teach whatever it is? That's why I'm not
basic.
That's my thing.
What doesn't have faces?
So what we're going to do with this object, and whenever you're in the presence of an object, the purpose is to give reverence to that object and to really see it. So you're in the presence of mystery. I mean, this little object contains everything within it. So this is what we're going to look for. And it's an opening up of life when you look at this. You may think it's an inanimate object because this is a dead toadstool, but everything we need to write about is in there. And it's just a way of seeing. So what you are going to do is hold your object in your hand and just look at it. And while you're looking at it, you're going to use your other hand to draw the object as you see it. Now, the object is not to reproduce this and make a picture, a camera reproduction of it. What you are trying to do is see this object. It's a meditation. It's a way of getting into intimate touch with the visible world and through it, ourselves. And so that's what you're going to do. Okay, this is the instructions that he gives. Okay, number one, and you just do as I tell you to do as I read this now, because this is not my material, this is the author's. Everyone got what they want for the tools?
Their pens.
Do you want a red pen? You don't need it yet. Do you want a blank piece for your drawing? And you should have one of the plain sheets for the drawing without the lines on it. Okay, now let your eyes fall on whatever it is you're holding in front of you, the object that you chose, and just look at it. Study it just from that one angle. All right, now close your eyes for a few minutes. Close your eyes. And just try to visualize that object with your eyes closed. Okay, now open your eyes again and focus on the same object again. Look it in the eye until you feel it looking back at you. Feel that you are alone with it on earth, that it is the most important thing in the universe, that it contains all the riddles of life and death. It does. You are no longer looking, you are seeing. Now, take your pencil loosely in your hand, and while you keep your eyes focused on the piece that you're looking at, allow the pencil to follow on the paper what the eye perceives. Feel as if with the point of your pencil you are caressing the contours, the whole circumference of that object. Just let your hand move. Don't check what gets onto the paper. It doesn't matter at all. If your pencil runs off the paper, that's fine too. You can always start again. Only don't let your eyes wander from what it is seeing, and don't lift your pencil from your paper. And above all, don't try too hard. Don't think about what you are drawing. Just let the hand follow the eye. Let it caress. You are not making a picture. You are not being creative. We are just conducting an experiment in seeing, in undivided attention. The experiment is successful if you succeed in feeling you have become that object, regardless of what appears on the paper. Okay, we're going to stop with that part of the exercise. That's an exercise you can do again and again and again. It's a meditation again. It's not an art project. It's trying to see, really see this object as holding all the secrets of life and death. So now we're going to try to take it out of there with words. So this is what we're going to do. Now if you'll take your other paper that you have something to write on. This is about a 4-step project, but it's going to be, there'll be times when you'll just be writing, and then I'll interrupt at a certain point and ask you to go on to the next thing. But it still concerns this object that you have. So what I want you to do now, you've been just looking at it, at one aspect of it. Now what I want you to do is to, the ideal thing would have been for us to go for a walk and out the road and back or on any of one of the trails for a little while, and all of us pick up our own objects, because this is my unconscious picking up things as I walk along. I mean, these are the things that are I'm attracted to, so I pick them up. But if you go for a walk, you walk along and you pick up, maybe by the time you're through walking, about 3 objects. And then as you walk back, you lose 2 of them. So the one you have left is the one that you would do this kind of an exercise with and work from there. But now I just want you to take it in your hand. I want you to feel it on all sides. Hold it in the palm of your hand. The palm of your hand can tell you a lot of things. It may have an odor. You can smell it. It may have a taste. You could taste it. Do whatever you need to do to really look at all parts of this object that you have. And then when you think you have looked at it and have really seen all the different aspects and have a good knowledge of it, I want you to make a list of 10 things you could do with this object. 10 things. Ten uses for the object that you picked up. And this can be, this is a writing class now. This isn't a literal class at all. This is, what could you imagine using that object for? What could you use that object for? Quickly, without thinking again, you don't get logical in this. You just go for whatever first thought comes into your head and put it down, because those are the ones you want, the first thoughts. What could you use this for? Here again, if you fall short of 10, you don't get penalized. But if you can go to 20, well, I don't have gold stars either, so. But when I give an instruction, if it doesn't work for you, if you can only think of 2 or 3 or 4, that's fine. If when I say write something, your mind goes off someplace else, that's what you follow. That's what we're here for, is to follow the unconscious. I'm just saying things to prod that, and then you go with whatever your unconscious gives you. Down at the end here. Figure out where I could stand where people could still. That's okay. I can also move around. Oh, and do you want to find an object on that table over there and bring it back? That's what we're doing here. You just pick one off that and just has your name on it. It talks to you in some way. Stop wherever you are. All right, if you don't have 10, that's just fine. Let's see, is there a pen somewhere? Do you have a pen with you? Otherwise, send a pen down the table or a pencil. Okay, why don't we just hold, Jennifer, would you mind starting?
Okay.
And then just hold your piece up so everyone can see it, and then just quickly read us your list of ideas. Just a piece of wood. It's just a piece of wood. It's a wonderful piece of wood.
Gnarled piece. Doorstop, knickknack, scraper, fire, garden ornament, digging tool, a seam, something to grow old with.
Wonderful. Okay. And let's go to her left.
Throw it.
Could you see it? What is it? Oh, it's a piece of pottery. I mean,
it's part of one of those electrical.
That's right.
Up on the top.
Yeah.
Throw it and make part of a dam out of it. Hold an electric line. Skip it on a lake. Put it on a shelf. Scare a bear. Scratch a glass. Prop a table. Give it to a child. Make a bulge in a pocket and make a decoration in a fireplace.
Good. Okay.
I have a rusty nail. Why'd you pick this up anyway?
I was up to the tailings yesterday. Lots of stuff up there.
Could build with it. It could be used to hold something, which is in the nature of the building. Mm-hmm. Use it as a paperweight. Hurt with it.
Pardon?
Hurt with it. Hurt somebody. Scratch with it. Make a collage. Part of a collage.
Shh.
Start a twine ball. Imagine where it originated.
This I could use as a back stretcher. A utensil. An art object. A reminder of life. Firewood. Conversation piece. A honey scoop. And a yarn spool.
Next.
I had a hard time thinking of something practical, so most
well, be impractical.
Yeah, most of it was as a piece of beauty, as an ornament for a table or a wall to hang from someplace. But I also thought if you needed something out of a narrow space, you could reach in. If you wanted to brush something or you know, you could hold it over and you couldn't reach, you could reach like that.
Keeper of dreams, decoration, sponge, tell worries to, desk mate, gift to a friend, gift to myself.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone know what is it? Is it lichen?
Moss.
Is it moss?
Mm-hmm.
What it is?
Moss.
Reindeer moss. I don't know what kind of moss it is.
Okay. I have this rock. Throw in a mountain stream. Cut an object with. Make jewelry. Which I've done in lapidary. I didn't know about. I used to snap caps when I was
okay,
a kid.
Yeah.
With these. The firework. Time, sit on a table, conversation piece, pet rock, build a tower.
Really? Okay.
I just selected single verbs.
That's fine.
Scratch, crack, fan, decorate, play, break, and paste.
Saw my what I saw it as what I could do with it. A seahorse, a swimming sea creature, a railroad car, part of a macrame, a miniature tree snag, jet exhaust shape, a snail, a bottom feeding fish, and an aging bearded gnome.
Okay. I see you got some written down too in that.
Oh, you got the good stick. I ended up, first of all, I called it life, sacred, bear, seal, whale, and then inspirational object.
Okay.
That's a dried mushroom toadstool. Cooking ingredient. seeing as an object or ornament. Shelter, if you were like a little fairy. Necklace, mosaic, button, part of a bouquet, and a source of fire if you want to burn.
I guess this is the top of the book, left of a mushroom.
It's actually, is that what it meant?
Yes, it is. But anyway, I figure it was to sit upon it, one or a fairy, or to put in. To tease my little brother with, to drink dewdrops, to curl up and wonder with, to give as a gift to a friend, to share secrets with, to play checkers with, to travel to my own inner world, to climb under a log with, and to run away from home.
And this is a pine cone, and it has some of the green still on it, and where the cone meets the fur, it's a wonderful fragrance. Could smell the pine fragrance where the cone meets the branch, could stare at it and read it, could hold it, could talk to it, could put it on my kitchen windowsill as a reminder of my own growth, could use it as a teaching tool for children, and could learn its gentleness.
It was real easy to imagine this one looking back at me. This was kind of spooky. Okay, scooping peanut butter. Thoughts are not on food here. Buffing skin, cutting string, decoration, put it in a flower pot, or I could use it to grow a tiny plant, put it in a fish tank, and it's purple on the back, so I could use it as a touch of color on the tabletop. I could return it to its home or keep it as a reminder of the ocean.
Where do you suppose I found it? Do you think I found it around here?
Well, it reminded me of the ocean.
Yeah. I didn't bring any along. I usually carry shells with me for classes. I found them by the garage down there by Shelley number one. There's a whole pile of broken shells down there.
Huh.
So. Well, I have this wonderful piece.
And nobody gets out of here with that one. It's mine.
I put give it as a gift from Norway, a troll. Draw circles from it like water after a stone drops in. Use it as a map to find one's way home. Decorate a fence post. Use it as a paperweight. Carry on the dashboard of my red pickup. Use as a reminder of a friend's scratchy personality behind a smoother facade. Forget it when I go home. Paint it, burn it, and then rescue it.
Okay. This really is a knothole, but to me it looks like a rose. It's all curled and
and I could use it for a paperweight. I could polish it and use it for a decoration. It could have a hole drilled in it and used for a necklace, especially when it was polished down a little bit. I could burn it, or I could cut it in many different ways. I could use it for a candlestick. It would make a pair of earrings, cut and polished. Or I could throw it. I could give it to a friend. I could put it in a flower pot along with the flower, amongst some of the rocks I have there. That's about all.
Oh, that's great. I have a piece of lichen on a little piece of the bark of a tree. And I couldn't think of too many things to write because I've had many pieces like this and felt ashamed that I took them from the woods. So I could use them for a decoration. I could draw a picture of it, give it away to a friend to see, throw it away, put it on a picture, or take it apart. Okay. So you can see the many, many uses for these things. Okay, now we're going to go one step further. I want you to describe as best you can the object in writing on your paper. I'll give you about 10 minutes. Its shape, its color, describe it so that someone could maybe do a watercolor painting from it, or I probably won't give you quite 10 minutes for it, somewhere in there. But just describe it from all angles, and that includes all the senses. So how it feels, how it looks, how it makes you feel could be part of that. Its color, its smell, if it has any, the texture. Try to get all of those things in there without, and if you think it's a beautiful piece, do all those things without using that word, but simply by describing in good details what it actually is. Okay, finish the sentence you're on and then we'll move on. If you think you want to do more description later on your own, skip a few lines or turn your sheet over and do the next part on the back side. But for now, we'll just stop with the description and go to the next. In the next section that you write, if you can think of an image for the object that you have, what is it like or what does it remind you of, an image? I have one poem here. Robert Bly does a lot of object poems, and the object that he describes in this poem is a seal. But what he sees, for example, he looks at the seal and he looks at the sky. He sees the seal looking up at the sky and he says, he looks like an old lady who has lost her hair. And so if you would look at this object and see if you see anything else in it or does it remind you of something, try to create an image for this object that you have. Let's see, he has one other image that's great here toward the end. The seal is dying. He says, goodbye, brother, die in the sound of waves. Forgive us if we have killed you. Long live your race, your inner tube race. And that's a wonderful image there, making it. You don't have to say it's like something. You can say this is something, too. Actually, give it the name of whatever it brings to mind for you. So if you can just write a few lines of image, that's an image of that object that you have. Here's another one by him. I'll just read it in case you're having trouble. It's called A Cricket in the Wainscoting, but, and so what he's describing is the sound, not necessarily. The song of his is like a boat with black sails. That's a song. Or a widow under a redwood tree. Sound is reminded. Warning passers-by that the tree is about to fall. Or the song is like a bell made of black tin in a Mexican village. Or the hair in the ear of a 100-year-old man. So you see that great leap you have to make to get from this object to an image. And don't struggle with it. Just take whatever comes. You'd be amazed after you write it down that it's working. And then if you get an image for it, thank God for it, because that's a gift. That's what the unconscious has given you. It's a gift. And sometimes the image that you will get will be a memory of childhood or a memory of some other time. It may just be an image of some other time in your life even that would work. Okay, now the next one is the fun part. Now, this has to be someone close to you. And of course, the really touchy-feely ones are to say your mother or your father. But I'm going to let you choose your own close person. Who is this object most like? And how? Who do you know? Who do you know that's smooth and shiny on one side and kind of rough and dull on the other side?
I think I can just continue from that.
Yes, you could continue from your image. If you didn't get an image, maybe with this one you will get an image. So that's fine. That's great. So take several lines to say. And you don't have to give a specific name if you don't want to, or it can be like yourself even, or maybe it reminds you of yourself. But someone that is close to you. Who is this object like and how? And you can leave a few lines if you want to, and what we do next might be part of what you were already doing, so it may all be of a piece. But now I want you to think of yourself in terms of this object, and what I want you to write is, what parts of your soul you really value? Think of this object and what you've already said, and then think of those parts of your soul that you really value.
Parts of the soul?
Parts of,
what do you mean
soul?
Parts of the soul.
I don't know what I mean by it. You have to kind of take parts of the soul and decide what it means for you.
Do you mean in relation to the object? Or?
It can be in relation to the object. It can be in relation to what you've already written.
What was that again?
Okay. What parts, or you can do it separately completely and just think in terms of what parts of your soul you really value. What parts of your soul you really value. And then and if soul bothers you, think of the parts of you that you admire. For example, not weaknesses, but what other people might admire in you or what you know other people like about you. Strong things about you. Yeah, could be. Language isn't adequate, you know. It, soul to me is one thing, soul to you is one thing. We're kind of into that. Pardon? Well, it's kind of right in here. It's that inner deep heart where all the... my spirit is. I don't know how I define parts of it.
It doesn't really have parts.
That's fine. It doesn't have to have parts. What I say is not gospel up here. I'm just trying to get at your unconscious, and I'm using my language, so you have to take it and use it in whatever way you want. The whole theme of the writing, I've had quite a few who have been coming in every day, and when we started, my way of looking at listening to the sacred is to listen to the voice within, that creative voice within. We hear it often and we start turning away from it and not listening to it and not doing what it says or not. For example, when you're writing like this, if a thought comes into your head and you think, oh, the lady next to me is going to think this is really queer, or the teacher's not going to think this is right, you can't do that. You have to not be judgmental about whatever comes. and simply write the first thoughts that come. So it's parts that you admire, what others admire about you. Now this is an exercise you can do all by yourself. And again, when you take the part where you, who is this object most like and how, if you haven't already gotten at things that are in the unconscious, that part usually will do it. So what you're doing, you're writing about an object, but what will happen as you're doing that is things will be pulled out of you. It will bring back memories. And if it brings back a childhood memory, then that's the kind of thing you should go on and write about. Because all of us are full of stories that have to be, that need to be told, and we'd like to tell them more than we probably sometimes admit. And so those are the things you want to go on and write about. You may not ever use these for anything. They may not become a poem or a short story or anything that you're going to send off to a magazine and publish or anything. It may just be for yourself. But it's a good way to explore your own feelings about things, what you're thinking. I always feel I don't know what I'm thinking until I write it down on paper and write about it. And that's why I write poetry. I think the things that I go through come out as poems. And okay, I'd like to hear some of the images maybe that people had for their objects. Is there anyone? Maybe we just do this voluntarily. Maybe everyone didn't respond to that one, but if you have an image for it. And again, there are no right answers. Whatever answer you have is the right answer, because it's how you see it. It's what your soul saw as you looked at it, if you want to put it that way. Anyone? Okay.
I saw this as a person, an old person. And I described it, and then you said, pick a person, and then it became my father-in-law, who is gone now. But I wrote, old with cracked, dry skin, whiskers protrude beyond his withered flesh. He lies in the nursing home, losing his color day by day. Gray pallor replaces a rosy glow.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice suit. Okay.
The old tree did not fall gracefully. Its open wound at first was jagged by time. But time has smoothed the rough edges. Now one can see the growth rings, but the uneven surfaces as they undulate across are a reminder that much of the trauma has happened here. But time and the elements have worn smooth. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else
want to
read the image?
This one. This is the torso of the crucified Christ. Arms strained and stretched and ribs pierced.
Would you read that again and just a little louder?
Okay.
Just the first part of it.
This is the torso of the crucified Christ. Arms strained and stretched, ribs pierced.
The wonderful thing about this kind of writing is that it gives you thoughts you would never think otherwise. Okay.
I said, you beat the bird from a space odyssey or the tear of that alien pass.
Well, mine became prairie terrain. An arroyo in early winter, the cowboy's gone, and only wind, sun, and rain hollowing out the corners. She rides over the terrain in late October, the snow's not yet come, and finds the carcass of a calf. It makes her cry, and she dismounts her horse to cradle the tiny jawbone in her hand.
This is a woman just after childbirth with the cord still attached. No crying at all, just the last moment of embrace before separation.
We should have a reading of just this. People in the very class. Anyone else have an image?
So this is life, tattered and torn. Yet it is two lives together in dance and prayer. Mm-hmm.
And this is an eddy in the river in my life.
Good. Mm-hmm. And this is a spring, very tightly coiled and rough with bark and fringe on one side and freer and more graceful and more relaxed at the other. Mm-hmm.
So.
shaggy, aged, long-nosed, and bearded traveler of many lands, sinister, experienced in evil, and power gained and lost.
Wonderful. Okay. I've got one poem here that I have enough copies of, that, and the object in this poem is a fish. And then I'll just Elizabeth Bishop is a wonderful poet for you to pursue. She has very simple poems, but they're very, very wonderful. I chose this one because it has so many images in it. I mean, to look at a fish and then and see what she sees here. And the whole thing is practically description until you get to the last few lines and find out what she really thinks about this fish. Are people comfortable with reading if you read to a period? Is that okay with everybody? Okay. Why don't we start with you here and then just read from the beginning of a sentence to, or, you know, down to a period.
The fish. I caught a tremendous fish and held him beside the boat, half out of water, with my hook fast in a corner of his mouth.
He didn't fight.
He hadn't fought at all.
He hung a grunting weight, battered and venerable and homely.
Here and there his brown skin hung in strips like ancient wallpaper, and its pattern of darker brown was like wallpaper, shapes like full-blown roses, stained and lost through age.
He was speckled with barnacles, fine rosettes of lime, and infested with tiny white sea lice. And underneath two or three rags of green weed hung down.
While his gills were breathing in the terrible oxygen, the frightening gills, fresh and crisp with blood that can cut so badly, I thought of the horse's white flesh packed in like feathers. The big bones and the little bones, the dramatic reds and blacks of his shiny entrails, and the pink swim bladder, like a big peony.
I looked into his eyes, which were far larger than mine, but shallower and yellowed, the irises backed and packed with tarnished tinfoil, seen through the lenses of old scratched isinglass.
Isinglass.
They shifted a little, but not to return my stare. It was more like the tipping of an object toward the light.
I admired the sullen face, the mechanism of his jaw, and then I saw that from his lower lip, if you could call it a lip, grim, wet, and weapon-like, hung five old pieces of fish line, or four in a wire leader with the swivel still attached, with all their five big hooks grown firmly in his mouth.
A green line, frayed at the end where he broke it, two heavier lines, fine black thread, still crimped from the strained snap when it broke and fell away.
Like metals with ribbon spray and wavering, a five-haired beard of wisdom trailing from his aching jaw.
I stared and stared, and victory filled up the little rented boat from the pool of bilge where oil had spread a rainbow around the rusted engine to the baler rusted orange. The sun cracked thwarts, the oar locks on their strings, the gunnels, until everything was rainbow, 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 and I let the fish go.
Okay. What are some observations? How many of you like to read poetry or have poetry that you like to read? Okay. Good. Most of you do. Mm-hmm. What could you say about this poem? What would you say about it? Is it what you usually think of as poetry? Why not?
It's not a good.
Is it lack of rhythm? Is it
well, the
It's not a
predictable rhythm.
Yes,
right. So much imagery though. To me, that
the imagery
more,
is what. Mm-hmm. Yes, all of the things that get compared to the different parts of this: the full-blown roses, the wallpaper. Ah, oh, isn't it just rich with imagery? And that's what all of you have inside you. Everything that you've ever seen or heard is floating in this wonderful stream of unconscious. And when you start looking at things like this, and it's hard to do it, you know, at a first, the more you do it, the better you get at it, and the more attention you pay to things, the more it will happen for you. But in this one, the other thing is, your writing is like your own speech and your own breath. You don't acquire another language. You know, sometimes you'll read poetry that sounds like it's much fancier than when we speak normally. Your speech should be, or your writing should be, as you talk to one another, even in a poem.
But what would happen to this if you wrote it in paragraph form?
What would happen to it?
Would it cease to be what it is now and be something else? Could it not be written?
I would assume any poem could be. It would still have a rhythm.
And sometimes it's quite intentional. I mean, I think this is drawn out long, and in a way difficult, because that's what the fight of catching a fish is. You know, if you put it in a paragraph, it would shorten the whole thing. And you're getting a kind of process of realizing what this fish is going to mean. It's not just catching fish. You come to see a piece of wisdom in the end, and you let it go. But I think usually an artist, you might not know the real reason, but they usually have a reason for the form, that it is trying to say more about the thing it's writing about.
It read so easily for all of you, not having ever seen it, which is a good test for a good poem, I think. But the line breaks, too, carry you down. I always think of it as holding the fish up on a stringer, the long shape of it, which brings you into another kind of poetry that looked like the shape of the ship, the fish. But, yes, sure.
That kind of a question of the group. Mm-hmm. How many people here knew how it would end before you got there?
I hope it would end that way. That's what I would have done, but I wasn't sure where it was going.
That the person would let it go.
Yeah.
I finally glanced down because I thought, you must let it go.
Somehow, to me, this is what lifts it out of the ordinary, too, are those last few lines, you know, catching the fish and then realizing that this object was, this fish was something worth going back and saving.
One of the things that strikes me is how this poet has made the moment of oil in a boat so beautiful. I mean, I don't really fish, but I've been in the boat a lot with the oil kind of creeping around things on the bottom of the boat, and I don't find that very thrilling.
Builds into rainbows.
Yeah,
she has another one, but I didn't stick it in here, I don't think. It's called The Filling Station, and it's the same long, narrow poem, and it's this old oily filling station, but it's wonderful because, well, there's a doily under a pot of plants and things are in order and things like that, and she says, someone must have watered these flowers. Someone must have loved, you know, just changed it completely then toward the end, because it's the same kind of thing, taking something that...
Because this victory that's filling up the rented boat, whose victory is that?
Whose do you think it is? Anyone. This is open to anyone. I don't have answers up here.
Well, I thought if you rent a boat, you know, the more human or male perspective I'm going to project here would be that to justify the expense, you should come home with a fish. Right. So that there was victory.
That's the victory, the catching of the fish.
Except the other tug.
No, I thought it was the fish's victory. So all the victories of the past.
See, the fish has got medals. I mean, it's hooks in its mouth are like medals with ribbons.
I think if she viewed catching the fish as a victory, she wouldn't have let him go.
Well, no, I don't mean so much her viewing it, but it's like the boat, a fishing boat goes out in pursuit of the fish, albeit the person who rented it.
Isn't it sort of a double victory? It seems to me. I think in the beginning she figured she's had a victory because she got this fish. I mean, after all, she's fishing, and I bet even women have never gone, would go out and never return with a fish. I'm sure if she's a fisher person, she's returned with fish before, and it's been a victory. But then in the final end, the fish is as a victory.
They're both victories.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
The fish says different life. That's the way I feel.
There's a victory in overcoming that first impulse, which is to keep
to
be transformed by the process as an experience of victory over oneself. Desire.
Any other comments on the poem or anything you'd like to say about it?
She really anthropomorphized it. I mean, it became a person. She put all human qualities on it, looking into its eyes with irises and...
And that's something you could take any one of your objects and do, you know. I mean, every object doesn't lend itself to that, but it's something you can do.
Well, and the like metals with ribbons frayed and wavering, you just think of kind of like the old, some of these old grizzled veterans of war. Mm-hmm. They're out there, really old, they're at the Veterans Day Parade.
Green weed.
Yeah.
But all her metaphors are objects. I mean, she doesn't really humanize them. The comparisons are almost all objective, even the eyes.
And the iris is patent.
The fishing trip would not have been necessary for a meal for her family either. Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you a story, just a brief one, why I knew how it would end, is that one time I was out hunting with my father, and it was in South Dakota, and we were out hunting by this lake, and it was early, very early in the morning. The sun was just coming up, and we all these ducks, these green-head mallards that were coming from Canada, way up in the Arctic Circle, were coming off the lake. And it was one of the first time I ever went hunting. And my dad says to me, "Don't shoot until I shoot." And so we were in this cornfield, and all these ducks landed, and they were all around us, you know, they were quacking, and we were laying there with our brown coats on. We wouldn't move, we couldn't move at all. And I thought, when's my dad going to shoot? When's he going to shoot? And they're quacking, they're eating corn, they're going all over. And pretty soon they start to flutter, and pretty soon they start to take off. I mean, we were there a half hour. And they take off, and every one of them is gone, and I look over, I just can't figure out what's going on. I look over my dad, and he's crying.
Have you written that down?
Yeah, I have, but I just knew how this was going to happen from that experience.
Did he explain to you why he was crying?
I never even talked about it.
What you should do is write a story about why he was crying. Do it yourself. That's another way of getting at things, is to, he doesn't know the answer. The poem about my father was one I made up, you know. The story I wrote about my father I made up because I didn't know about my father. So I made up a story thinking of how it would be. So you can do that, and that's a good way, and it's healing too.
And you could write about why you didn't talk about it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
It reminds me of what the Indian fellow has been trying to teach us all week, of the lessons from Mother Nature that are there for us that we need to learn.
Well, I'm going to close on that nice thought. It works in well with this poem by William Stafford that I'm going to read. Those of you who haven't been in the class before, William Stafford is one person I would recommend if you want to read about writing. He has one called The Australian Crawl and one called You Must Revise Your Life. And writing is like life. Everything that, all the rules for, there are no rules for writing, but all of the things about writing are the same things about life. So it really, you don't ever have to write to read books about writing. And if, as you go out, you would lay your object on the table, I have become attached to some of these. So, okay, one is called "Writing the Australian Crawl." I have it up here to look at. The other one is The other one is "You Must Revise Your Life." It has no answers in it, however, so don't look for those. But it has wonderful things in it. Pardon? Oh, I know. I'm the same age. I know that. But when I first bought the book, I was looking for answers. All right, this is by William Stafford, and it's called Every Morning All Over Again. Only the world guides me. Weather pushes, or when it entices, I follow. Some kind of magnetism turns me when I am walking in the woods with no intentions. There are leadings without any reason, but they attract. If I find there is nothing to gain from them, I still follow. Their power is the power of the surrounding world. But things that promise, or those that will serve my purposes, they interfere with the pure wind from nowhere that sustains a kite, or a gull, or a free spirit. So, afloat again every morning, I find the current. All the best rivers have secret channels that you have to find by whispering like this, and then hear them and follow.